An aerial photograph of old film studio buildings is reflected in a shining brass bar, which tilts downwards, revealing itself to be part of a shield-shaped border, the letters WB in its centre. 75 years entertaining the world. Shimmering lights glinting in black rippling waters. In shifting white letters, Warner Brothers Pictures presents a Baltimore Pictures Constant Company production in association with Punch Productions. A Barry Levinson film. Dustin Hoffman, Sharon Stone, Samuel L. Jackson. The names magnified and refracting in a turning transparent orb. Sphere. Behind the orb, images appear and fade into each other. Drawings and engravings of 18th century tall ships, some under attack by mythical monsters, giant squid, sea serpents, dragons rising from the depths. The ghostly albino forms of deep-sea fish. Angry mouths open, cruel teeth bared, luminous eyes staring into the blackness. Creatures from a cold world, unpenetrated by light. The titles continue. Peter Coyote, Queen Latifah, Liev Schreiber, Marga Gomez. The still images continue to mingle. The hardened skeletal bodies of almost transparent bulbous fish, some with wing-shaped fins, others with horns and spikes projecting from their strange forms, all caught in the intense light of underwater cameras. Some of the titles form pulsating circles like glowing jellyfish moving up through the water. Music composed by Elliot Goldenthal, based on the novel by Michael Crichton, adaptation by Kurt Wimmer, screenplay by Stephen Hauser and Paul Atanasi. Produced by Michael Crichton and Andre Wald. Produced and directed by Barry Levinson. Sunlight glints off the surface of a glassy green sea, a large white helicopter flying low over it, its whirling rotor blades seemingly turning in slow motion. A flickering circular display of white, interspersed with orange, blue and red stripes. In front of the chopper, a vast featureless ocean stretches out to meet the pale blue sky on the horizon. In the front passenger seat, a middle-aged man, Dr. Norman Goodman, is sleeping, his head tilted back. He wakes and checks his watch. The pilot turns to him.
It's late. Not bad. So where are we?
Where'd they bring you in from?
San Diego. Left yesterday.
So you came Honolulu, Guam, Pago here?
Yep.
Long trip. What kind of work do you do, sir?
I'm a psychologist.
Hey, a shrink, huh?
Yeah.
Why not? They've called in just about everything else.
How do you mean?
Well, we've been ferrying people out of Guam for the last 2 days. Physicists, biologists, mathematicians, you name it. Everybody being flown to the middle of nowhere in the Pacific Ocean.
What's going on?
Oh, they're not telling us anything, sir. What about you? What'd they tell you?
Well, they told me there was a plane crash.
You get called in on crashes?
Oh, I'm on a list of psychologists the FAA brings in when a plane goes down. So where exactly are we now?
That's where we're headed over there. Here, take a look.
Norman takes a pair of binoculars. Taking off his glasses, he looks through them.
Wow. All that for a plane crash?
I never mentioned a plane crash.
A large flotilla of ships and boats, some of them Navy vessels, sits in the middle of the ocean. The helicopter flies towards a heliport on one of the larger craft. In white letters, the surface. Norman's led inside.
Any other gear, sir? Watch your step.
No, that's it. I'd like to call my family.
We'll get you settled in quarters first. Are you to remain there until we send for you?
I'd like to get started right away.
We'll send for you.
It's critical that I see them.
See who, sir?
The survivors. If I don't get to them within the first 24 hours...
What survivors?
The survivors of the plane crash.
Plane crash?
Listen carefully. I give them post-traumatic stress and survival guilt. Maybe I should talk to someone who knows what's going on.
Talk to the ship's psychiatrist.
I'm a psychologist. That's why I was sent down here.
I told you to go over an hour ago. I need a phone.
We'll have to discuss that with Mr. Barnes.
That's fine. Barnes, give me a call. I'll call him. Norman.
What are you doing here?
Would you take your hands off me, please? Do you have any idea who I am?
Well, he will if you just tell the name of the book you wrote.
It's called Astrophysics You Can Use. It was a Book of the Month Club main selection.
Never heard of it. Now back in your quarters.
Book of the Month Club main selection. Read your book here, right? After all these years, you haven't changed.
Well, it's written for the layman.
He's not impressed.
They don't read. Is there a phone in here?
No.
Would you stop?
I've been trying to call my wife for 15 hours. Wait a minute.
Norman spots a blonde. The door slammed shut. Norman inside a small cabin. He sits reflectively on the bed inside. A man in dark glasses wearing a blue military-style uniform comes in.
Goodman!
Yeah?
Been here long?
I've been here 3 hours.
Welcome aboard. I don't mind telling you this thing scares the hell out of me.
Probably already too late. You might as well put me on the helicopter and send me back, because whatever damage is done to the survivors is already done. You know what I mean?
Hold on, we'll get to that.
Look, I don't even know who you are or what you are.
Who are
you? Navy? Military? What are you?
You ever hear of the OSSA?
Yes.
They don't know who I am. That should reassure you. Hey, look, Goodman. You haven't talked to anyone about this, have you?
Yeah, I talked to the helicopter pilot.
What'd you tell him?
What did I tell him? I told him I was here to see the plane crash. That's my job.
Plane crash. Good.
There was no plane crash.
Spacecraft.
Oh, a spacecraft. Well, I guess that explains a lot. NASA?
That doesn't surprise you?
Well, at least it explains the secrecy.
The secrecy's critical, Norman. You made that explicit in your report.
They're now on a lower deck.
What report?
ULF.
I wrote that for the Bush administration.
And that's our Bible here, every jot and tittle.
But that was a report about a possible encounter with an alien being.
Motionless, the man stares down at Norman.
You want to come with me?
The man turns and walks towards a door marked restricted.
Oh, boy.
About 3 weeks ago, a ship laying fiber optic cable between Honolulu and Sydney hit an obstruction 1,000 feet underwater. Cut this cable here clean as a shears. The Navy got interested, sent out a search ship. It turned out that what did it was this.
On a screen.
This with SLS side-looking sonar. This is an aerodynamic fin longer than a football field, bigger than any known wingspan. This is the fuselage. Okay, this is ultra-high-res SLS bottom scan. Came in a week ago. There it is, buried under about 8 yards of coral.
There's something wrong with that measurement. Pacific coral grows at the rate of about an inch a year. You can set your watch by it.
That's right.
Yeah, well, so you're saying the spacecraft crashed in the year...
1709.
So you're saying the spacecraft crashed 300 years ago?
288.
Well, that's impossible.
Well, it's not impossible if this spacecraft came to Earth from an alien civilization.
Whoa. Wait a minute. You think this is an alien spacecraft?
See, it's not impossible. It's ridiculous.
We think there's an unknown life form on this spacecraft, and that's why you're here. You are the human contact team that was recommended in the Goodman report. We have a biochemist to assess the physiology of the unknown life form. We have a mathematician, because that'll probably be our common language. And we have an astrophysicist to locate its place in the cosmos.
Led by a psychologist.
That's right.
So that's what the little green men are saying nowadays? Take me to your therapist?
Mm-hmm.
Norman smiles.
Listen up. Contact teams meeting an unknown life form, or ULF, must be prepared for severe psychological impact. Stress reaction when confronted by unknown life has not been sufficiently studied and cannot be entirely predicted in advance. But the most likely consequence of contact is absolute terror. That's from Norman's report.
I'm sorry, are these parameters correct?
Yep.
So you're saying that you have a fuselage from a spacecraft over a half a mile long that crashed into the ocean 300 years ago and is completely intact?
That's right. And the kicker is, our sonar is picking up a low-level hum. Something's still running inside.
Hold on a second. There's no way this coral could have grown faster than an inch a year?
No.
Well, that's what we're going down there to see, isn't it?
What? Who says we're going down there?
Harry, that's a joke, right? I mean, you're kidding. This is the greatest scientific discovery since Copernicus. It's bigger than Copernicus. The idea that we're not alone, it'll change everything. We have physical evidence that there's extraterrestrial life. You don't want to see that?
Well, I gotta say, I resent this briefing very much.
And how's that, Harry?
If Norman's report calls for a biologist, a mathematician, an astrophysicist, and a psychologist, why are you here?
Physical protocols start in half an hour.
In a medical room...
You wear glasses all the time?
I just started wearing these. Why are the glasses a problem? Because I don't actually need them. Clinically speaking, they're just for reading. And they're more of a crutch, really, actually. I see fine without them.
You know, they say there's no problem, but they didn't anticipate I'd be going 1,000 feet under the water.
You take any prescription medication?
No.
None at all.
Beth looks slightly nervous.
You know, once in a while, sometimes I might take like a piece of Xanax or something if I'm nervous. Something like that. Not much.
Knee surgery. Complete reconstruction of ACL, right knee. Still have a steel pin here, steel pin up here. A little medial collateral damage.
I see that you have a scar on your neck.
Car accident.
Were you drinking?
Yeah. But I wasn't driving.
Later, Norman takes Harry aside.
I just want to apologize for putting your name on the list.
What are you talking about?
When I made up the port, you know, a few years ago, I just picked names of people I knew.
And?
Well, you know, I know Ted because of his father, you know.
Yeah, so what's up?
Beth was a patient.
Okay.
It's a bogus report.
What? You know, did you tell Barnes?
No, you can't do that. That's fraud. Look, they came to me, you know, new administration, my political agenda. They said, look, in case of an alien invasion, do's and don'ts.
Well, why didn't you just say no?
$35,000. Paid the down payment on my house. New administration. They want to prove to the public they're doing something new.
All right. So how'd you come up with this team of a marine biologist, an astrophysicist, and a mathematician?
Right.
How?
I don't know. Sounded good. I mean, right? They didn't come to me.
Okay, look.
They picked
look, I forgive you, Norman.
I forgive you. Thank you.
But I don't forgive you for Ted. He's a pain in the ass.
You're right.
Oh, you owe me.
I'll talk to him. We're going to be down there for 2 hours. You don't have to be around him. He idolizes you anyways, but I'll talk to him. I'll buy you dinner.
All right.
I'm sorry.
All right, your secret's safe with me. Come on. Get over.
I can't believe this thing happens like a dream. Have you called your wife?
No.
Why not?
This will be a saturation dive. You'll be going to a habitat in 1,000 feet of water. Sub will take you to the habitat and you'll transfer aboard. Once you're at 1,000 feet, your body will be pressurized for that depth. You could actually hold your breath and take a quick dip because the pressure wouldn't bother you. Although I wouldn't recommend it. Because the water's so cold, you'd suffer hypothermia and you'd freeze to death in less than 2 minutes. That's the reason for all the diving suits. Your helmet is provided with the rebreather for your air supply. Now, directly following this briefing, I'll be taking all of you to an onboard dive tank, where for over the next 8 hours, you will be trained in deep saturation dive techniques and emergency procedures. Now, once you've gone down 1,000 feet, if you return to the surface, you will have to commit to several days of decompression. There is no real quick return. However, there is a mini-sub that may be used as an emergency escape vehicle. But there must be a ship at the surface to mate to for decompression. Now, without decompression, your body would literally burst. Okay, now, under these circumstances, you are very well controlled. Okay, the dive has been planned well and professionally monitored.
In white letters, the deep. Norman climbs down a metal ladder into a small submarine. Inside, Beth shifts nervously in her seat, tilting her head back, ruffling her short, cropped blonde hair. Ted stares at the ceiling. The man in the blue uniform, Barnes, is at the controls next to another man.
All right, the descent's going to take about 13 minutes. Descending at 80 feet a minute. It's going to get chilly. Try to relax.
Oh, next time, just tell us when you're going to push the button.
The sub descends slowly, its strong lights piercing the gloom. Harry looks into the distance.
Horn concerto in E-flat. K447.
Norman looks across at him, Harry's bald head resting against the seat back, his face calm and relaxed, his feet jumping uncontrollably. Beth studies her watch. Ted looks behind him at the bubbles cascading upwards past the narrow window slot. The sub continues down, its propellers leaving a foaming wake behind it. Harry looks across at Ted.
How are you holding up there, Captain Nautical?
I'm loose.
I'm uptight.
We okay?
Don't worry about it. We're in the river now.
What river?
It's a temperature-salinity differential that flows like a river inside the ocean.
We're in the middle of the ocean, under the ocean, and there's a river.
That's right.
Ted grips metalwork above him.
You okay?
No, right now I'm not okay. No, would you please not touch me right now?
We're both nervous, yes?
Would you cut that out, please, Harry?
You're having a stress reaction. That's Harry's stress reaction, okay? Those noises we're hearing, that's normal?
Those noises are the pressure of the water attacking the integrity of the sub.
You know a little something about that, don't you, Norman? How the pressure can attack your integrity.
Harry shoots him a look.
Be nice this trip.
Were you nice last time?
Harry looks at Beth and then back at Norman for an answer.
You two want to sit together?
Ted stands up.
Oh, my God.
And stares out the window.
Look at this. That's just a fence.
They all join Ted, staring out in awe as a gargantuan tail fin towers out of the murky deep. A submarine light is switched on and directed towards it, revealing what looks like giant pieces of metal plate joined together. A series of rectangular holes across its front edge. And further down, a horizontal stripe of alternating light and dark squares running around it. The sub descends slowly past the fin. A series of interlocking, bowl-shaped pods resting on the seabed in front of them.
That's the habitat. The Navy moved it in sections and set it up as a base of operations as soon as the spacecraft was discovered. It's manned by two naval personnel, and it'll be your home away from home while we investigate the spacecraft.
Yeah, well, it ain't the Motel 6.
The submarine slowly comes to a halt underneath a metal tube, bright light shining out of it. A woman, Jane Edmonds, watches their approach on screens inside the control room in the habitat. The sub rises, its conical top fitting inside the tube. Barnes watches a screen in flashing red letters, approaching docking bay. Ted peers out of the window in the top of the submarine, looking up into the circular docking bay.
All personnel set sub-1 engaging lock area.
A screen in front of another woman flashes, pressure equalized.
Sub-1, you are now depressurized.
Ted pushes up the heavy metal hatch of the submarine and clambers onto a walkway. He offers Beth his hand, which she takes. Harry, Norman and Barnes follow. Norman's team stand in a small chamber just off the docking bay. Still in the docking bay, Barnes picks up a radio.
All right, we're going to pressurize you now. I know it's hot in there, but you're going to feel coolness. That's the helium.
Helium.
The door of the chamber closes.
Oxygen is a corrosive gas. In the same family as fluorine and chlorine. Hydrochloric acid. Essentially, that's why we're beating helium down here, because oxygen at any level higher than 2.3 becomes toxic.
Can you run that by me again, Ted? I don't speak balloon.
But, oh, that's my voice. You see, the helium resonates differently with my vocal cords.
Well, I'm a yellow brick road.
All right, kiddies, cut it out. The voice regulators are behind you. Put them on.
Later.
The Navy dive team setting up a hydraulic robot in the airlock outside the spacecraft. And we'll use that to open its door.
Is that the door?
Yeah. We used sonar imaging to pinpoint it before the Navy divers went down.
The screens show robots at work.
How tall is that robot?
5 feet.
It's roughly the same size as an airplane door, isn't it?
Excuse me, Ted.
I just think that's worth taking note of, don't you?
Excuse me. Tell them our team is in place and ready, okay?
This is Habitat, the Navy dive. Our team is in place.
Has it occurred to anyone that maybe we shouldn't open that door?
Why are you saying that?
Well, we always assume these creatures will be green or insect-like, but basically human. But what if they inhale air and exhale cyanide gas? It's perfectly plausible.
We'll live forever like a virus or a yeast.
But why would you assume that an unknown life form would want to kill us?
A creature that can't be killed wouldn't think killing was right or wrong. It simply wouldn't have a concept of it. Instant eradication is what all the serious scientific stuff talks about, what little there is on the subject. Right. You did put that in your report, didn't you, Norman?
It's in there.
Another screen shows divers.
Good. Get us the ETD for team's departure to surface. Tell them we're in ready and thank them.
Habitat to Navy dive, our team's ready to take over. Descent sub, ready for your return to surface. Thanks for all your help. We'll let you know what we find.
The submarine leaves the habitat and makes its way towards the surface.
I'm not too thrilled at the prospect of this, you know?
Why don't you go to the bathroom?
Let's go down your leg, Ted.
Really? You can urinate in these?
You can. The question is, would you want to?
In white letters, the spacecraft. They stand in the docking bay with large helmets on. Barnes taps a light on the top of his helmet to indicate Norman doesn't have his light on.
Where's the switch?
He finds the switch on a small pack strapped to his side and turns the light on. Beth turns to the others.
Okay, let's go.
Barnes forms his thumb and index finger into an O shape and jumps into the water through the hole in the centre of the docking bay. Lit by the lights emanating from the docking bay tube, he sinks slowly to the seabed. The others follow. and forming a line walk away from the habitat, heavy black boots on their feet. Barnes looks at the display of a wrist-mounted monitoring device and speaks to the other woman in front of the screens in the habitat.
All right, Fletcher. We're at 1,022 feet.
Ambient temperature, 34 degrees. Heading out north-northwest, 330.
It's firm bottom. Intermittent coral.
This is great, you guys. Wow.
Each with a handheld torch, they walk with slow, lumbering steps towards the colossal edifice in front of them. Lights mounted on the thick coral at its base, shining upwards at the towering tail fin. The craft is tilted downwards into the seabed, ribbed, conical engine tubes projecting from its rear end. Ted stares up in awe.
Look at the size of that thing.
Oh my God.
Barnes looks further down the craft, and light glowing from inside a tunnel cuts through the bank of coral.
You see that tunnel? That's where we're going.
They point their torches towards the tunnel.
Into the heart of darkness.
And slowly make their way towards it, Barnes leading off. Barnes turns to check that everyone is with him, and waving them on, they enter the low, rocky tunnel, green lamps mounted inside it.
We're in the coral pipe now, Fletcher. Approaching the airlock.
I'm feeling pressure in my ears. Is that normal?
Just use your equalizer.
A little better.
You know, the most toxic creatures on Earth live down here. The venom of a land animal is nothing by comparison. Even the weakest sea snake is invariably lethal.
Is that supposed to make me feel good, Beth?
They approach a yellow-framed entrance.
This is our airlock. It'll take us from a wet to a dry environment. We're assuming the inside of the ship is sealed.
This thing is enormous.
Norman looks up at the bubbles from their breathing apparatus running along the underside of a wing of the craft. Ducking down, they crawl through a semicircular hole in the bottom of the round entrance door and stand up in the chamber inside. Its walls composed of a strong, transparent material fixed onto the yellow metal framework. Barnes turns a lever, and the top half of the entrance rotates, sealing the semicircular opening. He turns another dial, and the chamber starts to fill with air. They look anxiously at each other as the waters recede around them. In front of them, another round door. They watch as Barnes turns another lever. The door slowly revolves, allowing access through another semicircular opening into a chamber in which a robotic rover sits. Fletcher watches the progress on the screens inside the habitat as they struggle to get the robot to work.
Hey, what's happening here, guys?
Well, maybe it's the hydraulics. The pressure messes everything up at this depth.
Time for a demonstration in basic physics, gentlemen.
Ted takes a hammer and chisel to the silver-colored door of the spacecraft. Harry looks at the door incredulously.
What is it, Harry?
Take a look. It's chipped.
All right, it's chipped, so what?
Well, I thought you said this thing wasn't damaged when it crashed, and that this titanium alloy was so super strong there's no way you could hurt it.
I did.
So how come it chips when this scientist just bangs on it with a hammer?
Is there heat coming off this thing?
She feels the door.
Right. Get out of there, Beth. Back up.
Just a minute.
I mean, get back now. Get back.
A circular lock spins, and the door slides up. They stand staring in utter disbelief at the cavernous, gloomy interior of the craft, a metal gangway stretching out in front of them.
Anybody else wonder who the hell opened that door?
Barnes steps onto the gangway.
How did that happen?
He shines his torch at the gangway's grilled floor.
I'm not sure about the atmosphere. Helmets stay on.
All right.
We come in peace.
Harry stares at Ted.
I always wanted to say that.
Beth follows Barnes inside.
All right, Fletcher. Inform the Navy we've gained access to the spacecraft. There's a hell of a lot of radiation shielding in here. It's a
huge grids of catwalks and plumbing and a lot of steam. It's endless. We'll stay in touch here.
The five of them wander along the gangway, their torches illuminating the massive expanses of pipework, some of it behind mesh screens. Beth shines a torch down a small flight of steps.
Somebody's been here.
What?
Well, there's footsteps and they ain't ours.
They look down at bootprints in the dust, covering a lower solid-floored walkway.
Whoa. So what do you say, Norman? Time to turn back?
I'm a little curious.
Let's break up into two squads. We'll never cover the territory otherwise.
Split up?
He's got a point. We've only got about a half hour of breathing time left.
All right, Ted and Harry, you come with me. Beth, Norman, stick together. Come on.
Hey, I think the people who built this place would call that divide and conquer.
Whoever built this thing wanted us dead, we'd be dead already.
Norman and Beth descend onto the lower walkway.
These guys show up with a grant to study the psychological effects of an alien invasion. I told all this to Harry,
Made up the report?
No, not all of it. I mean, I did research on half of it.
Well, who did the other half?
Well, I borrowed from, good writers. Isaac Asimov, Rod Serling.
Rod Serling?
Who would have thought that anyone even reads those government reports? What are the odds on that? You know what I mean? I show up here, half the Pacific fleet is here. I just didn't know what to do. I wanted to tell you, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Would this fall under the same category as Beth? I thought you knew I was married.
She glares at him and walks on. He follows.
I don't think we have enough oxygen.
Suddenly, part of the walkway lifts, carrying them at high speed up into the vast interior stretching above them. Four metal plates pull apart from each other, revealing a dark tunnel. Small, multicoloured lights from numerous control panels stretching along its length. Beth's eyes dart around, taking it in, and then gingerly the two of them step forward, walking across a sparkling floor. Further on, the tunnel broadens, the torch beams picking out a series of control desks. Norman looks up at a panel of softly glowing lights above his head.
That must be the cockpit. Hold on.
They walk up a small flight of steps. Barnes is examining mesh.
Look at this, Harry. Cross-dress bracing on the outer hulls. All axes supported. Look at this stuff. This is interesting, huh? Soft and strong at the same time. It's like better than rubber, better than steel.
You seem to know an awful lot about this stuff.
Yeah, I studied aeronautical engineering at MIT. Isn't that where you got your PhD?
Where I got mine. All three of them.
I hated MIT.
Envy?
Puberty.
How old?
First PhD? 18.
Damn. 1 year, Harry. You beat me by 1 year.
Let's push on. Let's go.
Man, they didn't tell you how heavy these things were out of the water.
Ted stands up and stares at what he's been sitting on.
Look at this. Come here.
He brushes dust off it. A small metal container hung on the railing. It bears an inscription.
Trash. Basura. Trash.
Perplexed, Harry looks at Ted. Beth looks around, examining the room lit by the lamp on her helmet. Her light picks out the skeletized remains of a man sitting in a black chair.
Oh, God.
She shines her torch at it and bends down to inspect the face.
It's human.
You mean humanoid?
No, Norman, I mean human. Blunt force trauma. You can see by the direction that the fracture runs that he was hit in the back of the head.
What's in his hand?
I don't know.
Norman walks across.
What is it?
He removes a packet from the cadaverous hand.
Smokehouse Almonds?
My God, it's an American spaceship.
It can't be an American spaceship. It's 300 years old. There weren't even Americans, let alone spaceships.
Well, it can't be, but it is.
Okay. Let's see if there's some kind of flight recorder or data computer, or we can ring up some kind of flight history.
A screen comes to life. Large lettered words appear.
Norman, look at this. It's in English. Come here. Okay, good. Right there. And there. Oh.
A heading, Flight Data Summaries, appears, along with a scrolling list of dates.
Look at the dates. Can't be.
Could be. It could be 2043 or 1643. I don't know which one is weirder.
The last date reads 21st of the 6th, 43. Norman reads the entry below this.
Unknown entry event. Present.
Beth turns anxiously to face him.
Sure?
Slowly, she reaches out. Holograms of rocks and dust shoot past them, and as they speed away into the distance, behind them they're seen to be part of Saturn's ring system.
Oh, Norman.
Beth watches in awe as one of Saturn's moons swings past. Norman holds out a hand, trying to touch the holographic images as they approach. Both of them now enveloped in a streaming display of glowing nebula, stars twinkling within the iridescent clouds of green and brown dust. The white spiral of a slowly turning galaxy approaches them, in the centre of which a twisting vortex reaches up into space, comets and stars being sucked into it. Norman and Beth become surrounded in an angry, swirling tumult of stars and dust. A sign flashes, warning, unknown event. A spinning white band of stars charges towards them. The hologram's gone.
This is Barnes, Norman.
Yeah, I can hear you. I can't explain it, but I think we're inside an American spaceship.
It gets better.
In another part of the spacecraft, the team of five approach a gigantic golden sphere.
What the hell is it?
Whatever it is, it seems to be what this bird was designed to do. Go out into space and gather things like this up and bring it back.
Yeah, but back from where?
Don't get too excited, Ted. Turn this thing over, it'll probably say made in Korea.
Somehow I doubt that, Harry.
No doors, no hinges of any kind.
Ted stares up awestruck.
I'll bet if you put a laser micrometer on this thing, you'd find that it was a perfect... I mean perfect, under the thousandth of an inch. That's a message in and of itself.
Really?
What do you mean?
Well, when Pope Benedict asked Giotto for a drawing to prove his worth as an artist, Giotto drew a perfect circle. Freehand. Perfection is a powerful message.
I know what the Zen masters would say.
What's that?
This ball wants to be caught.
Nah, nobody built this thing looking into their third eye, Beth. They went to a lot of trouble and they didn't do it for nothing. Something put this thing out there to get picked up and brought back here. If you've forgotten the Trojan horse, it could be a trap.
Don't you think that's a little paranoid, Barnes?
No, I'm going to put a video camera on this thing and keep an eye on it.
Norman waves.
Can I ask you something about this reflective surface?
Yeah, it appears to be mercury, doesn't it? Except mercury's liquid at this temperature.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm talking about. What worries me is that it's reflecting everything but us.
They stare at the reflection of the huge room in its surface.
I hate to be the one non-scientist that picks this up, guys. You know what I mean?
Norman looks across at Barnes.
What do you think it is?
Barnes strokes his hand over the surface.
I don't know. Whatever it is, it's alien.
The analysis. The team sit in the Habitat stainless steel galley, Fletcher and her colleague putting out food.
Okay, an American spacecraft, materials and technology more advanced than anything we know of, crashes into the ocean.
If it crashed, why wasn't it damaged?
The materials are obviously super strong.
If that's the case, how come it chipped when you banged on it?
Ted raises his eyebrows thoughtfully.
Okay. Better. It didn't crash. It arrived 300 years ago.
From where?
Not from where, from when.
So you're saying this thing took a wrong turn?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what if the craft inadvertently flew into a black hole? It arrived in our past from its present. What about those dates you saw on the flight report?
43, 47.
That's right, that has to be 2043, mm-hmm. 2047. That image that you told me you saw on the monitor, from what you described, that sounds exactly like a black hole, a tear in space.
We know what a black hole is, Ted.
I don't know what a black hole is.
A black hole is a collapsed dead star that has so much gravity it acts like a huge vacuum cleaner, sucking everything into it. Light, interstellar dust, time.
Time?
It's possible, but not plausible.
It's more than probable. It's rudimentary astrophysics. We just haven't been able to fly into one and prove it.
A screen reads incoming message. Cyclone due 0800 hours. Gale force conditions and southeast swells topside. Contact team must evacuate 2 hours or remain habitat for duration of storm. OSSA. Barnes takes a printout of the message to the others.
Well, I just got off the Horn topside. They're expecting a bad blow up there.
And they're pulling us out.
Pulling this out. Wait a minute. What do you mean pulling us out? What does that mean, pulling us out?
What part of pull out don't you understand, Ted? Extraction. We're leaving.
No. That's ridiculous. I mean, we haven't even begun to scratch the surface here.
If you've ever seen a Pacific cyclone, what we call a tornado is just a little fart. So I suggest you go back to the dormitory and take a nap.
So you just
need to lower your metabolism before we start the decompression.
You're just going
to
leave a time-traveling spacecraft at the bottom of the ocean?
I'm just going to follow my orders, Ted.
We're the welcome wagons for the aliens, Ted. There's no aliens. It was all made in America.
What's your point?
My point is, I'm a biochemist, and there's no life down here.
What is wrong with all of you? That doesn't mean there's nothing to learn, to explore.
You guys are the human contact team for an unknown life form. There is no unknown life form. So we're pulling out at 0900.
Norman, will you please say something to him?
What?
I don't know. Do you not have an opinion about this?
Yes, I'm delighted we're going back up top. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know about you, but this may look like a roadside diner, but in the meantime, my ears won't pop, and if I pull this thing away from my neck, I sound like someone squeezing my testicles. Let's go home.
In a bathroom area, Norman flosses his teeth while Harry takes a shower.
Barnes is wrong, you know.
What do you mean, wrong about the storm?
Harry comes out of the cubicle.
About the sphere. What about the sphere?
It's a lie.
Norman stops mid-floss and pulls the white thread out of his teeth. Water drips from the shower head. Norman goes into the dormitory area where Harry's dressing.
Why do you say that, Harry?
There's something inside it.
How can there be anything inside it? There's no door, no seams.
The sphere chooses what it will and won't reflect. Doesn't that seem like the actions of a conscious being to you?
Okay. Pop psychology, you want to know what this is really about, I think, for whatever it's worth. You're angry towards our friend Ted in there, because he figured this out before you did.
Harry stares at him.
Really think so?
I don't know. This is my first underwater session.
Harry pulls on a loose-fitting grey top.
Ted did figure it out first, didn't he?
Harry points playfully.
Good shrinkage.
And then climbs into a long cupboard-like bed in the middle of the circular dormitory. Norman sits on a bed against the wall opposite the entrance to the cupboard bed.
We're all gonna die down here, you know.
Norman freezes and then peers in at Harry.
What? What?
Harry leans up.
You see, it's curious. Ted did figure it out. Time travel. And when we get back, we're going to tell everyone how it's possible, how it's done, what the dangers are. But then why 50 years in the future, when this spacecraft encounters a black hole, does the computer call it an unknown entry event? Why don't they know? If they don't know, it means we never told anyone. And if we never told anyone, it means we never made it back. Hence, we die down here. Just as a matter of deductive logic, Norman.
Norman stares pensively at him as Harry turns off the light beside him in the small chamber.
Damn, I wish I could get inside that sphere.
In white letters, the sphere. A red light flashes. Norman runs along a corridor in the habitat, passing Fletcher.
What's wrong?
Talk to Mr. Barnes.
Where is he?
Video feed him.
Where is that? I don't know where the hell everything is. Where am I?
He finally runs through an open door.
What's going on?
I don't know, Norman. You tell me.
Barnes stares at a video screen showing the sphere.
What the hell is he doing?
I don't know what he's doing. Do you know what he's doing?
No, I don't.
Come on, Norman. There is no time. I need to know what you know.
Nothing. He said he wanted to go inside. I just didn't think.
We are inside, Norman. You mean outside?
He said inside.
Inside what? Inside the spacecraft?
I think inside the sphere.
The sphere.
On the screen, a torch beam appears, penetrating the darkness, moving towards the sphere. Harry, in the saturation diving suit, peers up at the sphere, neither he nor his torchlight reflected in the shimmering gold surface. He steps up close to it, eyes widening and a large, tired-like grin spreading across his face as his reflection gradually surfaces through the rippling exterior and then slowly moves up over the globe, Harry's image leaving a smoothed wake in the undulating golden shimmer. The reflection disappears over the top of the sphere. Harry himself has also vanished.
Oh, my God. Did he go inside?
I don't know. I don't think he went inside.
Well, what the hell's going on? He didn't just disappear.
I don't know. I don't think he disappeared. I think it's a glitch in the video.
Munzer, give me playback on that.
You'll have it in a minute.
You knew he was going to do this, and you never said anything.
No, I didn't think.
You didn't think, Norman.
I didn't think it was possible.
Well, where are Beth and Ted?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I don't know. I woke up, I heard bells ringing, and I started running, and now this...
That's impossible. I just
got a cable in my quarters. They're going to be
here in 25 minutes or less.
The only logical explanation is that the sub is still at the surface.
Is it also
logically possible your sonar is messed up?
Let's just calm down, all right? He didn't just disappear. We are not going to leave him.
You got that right, Norman. We are not going to leave without him. I am not going to lose a civilian on my watch. So you have just screwed up our trip to the surface. We are not going up to the surface.
We're not...
Harry, we are not going up.
We're not...
Harry, can you hear me, Harry? Harry, can you hear me? Harry. You know, Norman, this is not a triage situation. Norman? Norman!
He looks at the screens.
All right, go find me Ted and Beth.
In the control room, Edmonds gets up from beside Fletcher and runs off.
Norman, stop.
Barnes follows Norman's progress on video screens as Norman charges along corridors and into the diving suit room. Edmonds runs through the habitat. Clad in the diving suit, Norman jumps into the water in the docking bay, sinking swiftly to the seabed. Fletcher looks at a screen reading subsensors, no activity.
Sir, I'm still getting no reading on the sub. Forget the goddamn sonar, teeny. When Beth and Ted get here, keep your eye on them, make sure they don't go anywhere, all right?
Norman runs along a walkway in the spacecraft and comes into the cavernous room where the sphere is suspended by two black metal supports hanging down from the ceiling on either side. He walks slowly towards it. He shines his torchlight into the towering sphere, the only lights reflected in its surface being those of the lights in the room. Norman watches its exterior, slowly rippling like a fluid golden foil. He stands, transfixed. Harry's slumped form suddenly materializes in front of him.
What the hell? Harry, can you hear me? Harry.
Norman crouches down, putting his torch on the floor. He slaps Harry's arm.
Harry?
And looks at the monitoring device on Harry's wrist.
Harry!
Norman, is he alive?
Barnes, we have a problem. Harry's out cold here. His pulse is normal.
All his vitals are normal, but...
I don't get it. Harry?
Norman looks up to see the golden waters of the sphere parting like quicksilver to reveal his own image pushing out from the surface. The lights in the habitat go out. A large plug-shaped attachment, thick cables anchor to it, pulls free from the top of the habitat. Lights and power are restored inside.
Norman, can you hear me? We lost video here. Can you hear me, Norman? Norman?
He addresses Fletcher.
Well, that tears it.
What, sir?
We're on internal power.
Our follies.
They cut us loose, Teeny. For some reason, the sub turned back. Break out your 5-day deodorant pads.
We're here for the duration.
In the medical room, Beth examines an unconscious Harry.
Everything's normal.
Ted climbs a ladder and opens a steel door leading into the medical room. He passes Edmonds as he goes inside.
What's going on, sir?
Yeah.
To Beth.
Is it true? Did he go inside? What did he say?
He looks down at Harry.
He didn't say. He can't talk. He's a phasic.
He's asleep, Ted.
I can't believe he went inside the sphere. He didn't say anything? There's no door, no entry. How did he get in?
In the spacecraft, the reflection of the room and the sphere's surface now appears brighter. Barnes uses the intercom in the habitat.
Can I have your attention, please? We've lost contact with the surface. The habitat is now operating solely under internal power. We have plenty of food, oxygen, and fresh water to sustain us until the storm is over and we re-establish contact with the surface. But until that time, this mission is subject to emergency authority under my command.
In white letters, the power. Norman sits on his own in the galley area, an empty mug in front of him. He looks up at a circular window above him as a jellyfish pulses past, its greeny-yellow body trailing a mass of white-coiled tentacles. On the upper walkway of the video feed room, Fletcher opens a cabinet and pulls out a thin black plastic case, which she puts in a red waterproof box. She looks down at Barnes and Ted.
I'm gonna take this out to the mini sub, sir.
You up on the duty roster?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Ted watches her leave.
Where's she going? It's procedures. Everything in the habitat is videoed. So every 12 hours, we take the video storage out to the mini sub and press the reset button. The idea is if something happens to us and we don't reset it, the sub goes to the surface automatically. So if we're all dead, they at least have a partial record of what went wrong. Cheerful thought, huh? Mind the store a minute. I'm going to the head.
Reflectively, Ted watches Barnes leave before looking up at a video screen to watch Fletcher sink down into the water from the docking port tube. Fletcher makes her way over to a set of metal steps, dipping down onto the seabed, a jellyfish seemingly following her. She climbs the steps into a small submarine. Inside, she flicks a reset switch. Harry's eyes flicker open. In the control room, Edmonds watches a computer screen.
What the hell's that?
The diagrammatic representation of the outside of the habitat is replaced by flickering random numbers before the diagram returns. Fletcher's back out of the sub.
Wow, so beautiful down here. So tranquil.
Hundreds of jellyfish float in the water.
Oh, this is beautiful. It's hard to believe we have a typhoon 1,000 feet above our heads.
Ted looks up at the screen.
There's gotta be a million
jellyfish down here. Oh man, this is really beautiful.
She's becoming surrounded.
Hey, these jellyfish are getting a little friendly. Having a hard time seeing.
Ted watches the screen anxiously.
Hello.
Over the intercom, Norman listens to Ted's fumblings with concern.
Hello?
They're starting to stick to my faceplate.
Fletcher, this is Dr. Fielding. Just swim through them, they're harmless.
Barnes joins Ted.
Hey guys, these jellyfish are everywhere.
Fletcher, get out of there.
What are jellyfish doing at 1,000 feet?
Hey guys, I think they feel my
hands on my body. Tentacles wrap around her legs.
I can't get them off of me. They're stinging through my suit.
Fletcher, I want you back at the habitat on the dumpster. Back to the habitat.
It's all a suit.
Keep moving. Just keep moving.
In the galley, Norman sits solemnly listening to the transmission. Fletcher lies still, her body floating just above the seabed, as the jellyfish gently disperse.
Jesus Christ, she's dead. There's no bubbles.
Norman looks down. In the video feed room, Barnes and Ted stare blankly at the screens. Barnes leans towards a microphone.
Edmonds.
Yes, sir?
Come on down here.
Something happened to Fletcher.
Edmonds gets up from the control room desk, taking off her headset. Ted shuts his eyes sorrowfully. The screen in the control room showing the diagram of the habitat goes blank, and random numbers again fill the screen. The white figures scrolling up across the black background at an ever-increasing rate.
When I was 5 years old, I went out on a boat with my father. He told me not to jump in the water, so of course I did, and
Beth lifts up a jellyfish.
Oh, my. I jumped right into a school of these guys. Not this big, though. I think every one of them had a shot at me. I don't know what this lady felt, but... And it went beyond pain. It was... I've been afraid of them ever since.
Would it make you feel any better if I told you this wasn't exactly a jellyfish?
What do you mean?
I mean, jellyfish like this are unheard of. I don't know what this is, but it isn't God's creation.
Beth stops teasing out the tentacles of the creature and looks worriedly up at Norman. Later, a video screen shows an occupied body bag lying in the medical room. Ted wanders through the dormitory, confused at the sounds coming from the bathroom. Harry stands underneath the shower.
Very high.
Ted stares at him without announcing his presence. Norman knocks on a heavy metal door.
Come in.
Norman steps into Barnes' quarters.
Hello, Norman.
Hi.
Hi. Have a seat. You want some coffee, Norman?
No, thanks.
How well do you know Dr. Halpern?
I used to teach at UC San Diego years ago. She came for her master's.
Well, don't take it personally, but I'm assuming that she wasn't a romantic interest.
I'm sorry, don't take what personally?
Well, she's a tall, vibrant, younger woman.
Okay, what's your point?
So you knew her as a patient.
I'm not at liberty to discuss that, but you understand.
I understand that an exotic gas environment, 1,000 feet below the water with no lifeline to the surface, is about the most dangerous environment on the planet, Norman. If there's a problem, I gotta know about it.
Beth is fine.
Beth is fine?
Yep.
Beth's fine?
She's very fine.
Oh, okay. Would you like to read this and tell me what it says?
Are these my actual notes?
What does it say, Norman?
How in the world?
Does it say suicide attempt?
She was having problems with
it. Does it say electroshock therapy? Isn't that what it says, Norman?
What's your point?
Didn't this seem important enough to you to tell to somebody? You were willing to jeopardize the lives of all these people to have someone here who could be, in fact, mentally unstable?
Are you aware of the term overreacting? I can't even believe I'm discussing this with
you. Ted looks in.
What?
It's Harry.
What? He's awake?
He's really awake.
Whoa!
In the galley.
Man, oh man. Barnes, you're gonna have a real problem with me. As long as my good buddy Norman keeps cooking like this, I ain't going nowhere. It's toast and good. Bacon? Better. But these eggs are fantastic. Norman, what'd you put in these eggs? No, wait, don't tell me.
Beth's drawing in a notepad, a series of circles labeled egg and sphere.
Yeah. Tarragon.
Yep.
And, what is that? Gerbil? Is that gerbil?
Yes, it is. I'm glad you like it, Harry.
I love eggs.
Well, they sure seem to cheer you up.
Harry, that thing with you and the sphere, do you remember what happened?
Yeah. I went inside.
How'd you get inside, Harry? There are no doors.
Hey, there are doors all over this place, and we can't get out. We're still here?
Yes, we are.
Still didn't answer my question, Harry.
Harry looks down.
Norman? Yeah. Why are you looking at me like that?
Harry turns to smile at a surprised Norman.
Harry, are you saying we shouldn't still be here?
Where's Teeny? I thought she did all the cooking around here.
She had an unfortunate accident, Harry. She was killed.
Killed? How?
Jellyfish.
Norman gets a bowl out of a microwave.
Jellyfish? That's strange. Yes, it is strange, isn't it?
Here you go, Harry.
Whoa! Little onion rings.
No,
look at that.
It's not onion rings.
Harry eats one.
Good, though.
Guess what it is?
What?
Calamari.
Harry's eyes almost burst out of his head.
All right.
Norman and Ted slap him on his back to no avail. Ted stands behind him and performs a Heimlich maneuver.
I know what I'm doing, Norman. Bring it up, Harry. Come on. Come on, Harry. Bring it up. Bring it up, Harry. Come on, Harry. Bring it up.
Stop it. I'm trying to talk.
Come on. Bring it up.
Ted.
What?
You don't listen. He wants to say something.
God, I'm not joking, you asshole.
See?
I hate squid.
Norman nods, bemused, and takes the bowl away.
I'm sorry. I was trying to help.
Ted wanders away. Concerned, Barnes watches him. Harry gulps a glass of orange juice.
You okay? Harry, let me ask you something. You know, before you went into the sphere, you were convinced we all were going to die down here.
Yeah, I remember that.
Beth looks up from her notebook. Norman smiles.
You still believe it?
You afraid of dying, Norman?
Norman's face falls into an uneasy gaze. Barnes and Beth study Norman's reaction. Harry smiles. In the control room, all but one of the screens is now covered in a scrolling mass of numbers. Edmonds comes back to the desk. Alarmed, her mouth falls open as she looks from screen to screen. Ted and Norman walk down a corridor.
He's hiding something, you know it, Norman. He was in there. He went inside the sphere. Whatever it is he saw, he doesn't want to tell us.
He said he doesn't remember anything.
Oh, come on, Norman. You bought that?
Yes.
No. The whole food thing. It was all a diversion.
This doesn't have anything to do with your competitiveness with Harry.
Harry?
Harry.
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 19. Wunderkind.
Yeah, I rest my case.
Mr. Barnes would like to see you, Ted.
Why?
There's something wrong with the computer system.
In white letters, the first exchange. In the control room, Ted stares at the screens of numbers, one screen working normally showing weather data.
I tried purging it.
I tried purging it, it just keeps coming back.
What is it, a discharge from the buffer memory?
No, I ruled that out. I think the helium is getting to the chips. Probably a saturation effect.
And if that's true, what are our options?
Well, you have to change all the chips.
Oh, We gotta run this place on manuals. It'll be along 4 days.
Hey, boss.
Harry.
Kid?
Mm-hmm.
Figured that out yet?
It's a saturation effect, Harry.
I don't think so.
What do you mean?
If it's a saturation effect, it would be random.
What do you mean?
Well, this has a pattern.
Harry types in a command code, a window opening on the weather screen displaying a static view of the numbers, the first three rows highlighted.
See?
Like a code. A code from where?
Ted stares at the new window in amazement.
How'd you do that?
How'd you see that?
Try binary.
Ted types in further commands, the numbers turning into a series of zeros and ones, some separated by long gaps.
See? Letter breaks.
Norman stares at the men with an analytical look. Barnes watching the screens with keen interest as more numbers flood up.
Harry, you think this is coming from the sphere?
Don't know.
Harry, this mission is classified ultra top secret. Anything you translate on there is for my eyes only.
If you were it, how would you know our alphabet? Same way it's configured on a keyboard.
But reflected in an orb, spherically. A keyboard, but spherical. Take a keyboard, wrap it around a sphere, then, starting at the center key, G, number the letters spiraling out.
Ted, you're the man!
Got it, Harry. Still got it. Still got the juice.
Harry takes Ted's place. A keyboard on the screen, the letters replaced by numbers which spiral out from G, starting at 1.
Keyboard.
Norman puts on glasses. He offers them to Ted, who shakes his head.
All right, Ted.
Ted rejoins Harry.
What you gotta do now? Plug in the numbers.
Harry types in the numbers, each two-digit code representing a letter. In large white letters, the screen displays, "Hello, how are you?" "I am fine. What is your name?" "My name is Jerry." Norman gets up and joins the others, staring wide-eyed at the screen.
Friends, in the 8,000 years of recorded history, this is a first. You are now online with an alien intelligence.
You gotta be kidding. You must have messed up the translation.
No, I don't think so.
If this translation is right, this alien sounds like an idiot.
Well, that's something to consider, a stupid alien. Well, I must have him.
Well, I will admit the message is a little childlike, but actually it's quite perfect. I mean, it's short, to the point, non-threatening. Kind of the way you talk to a small child or a dog.
Look at this.
More numbers fill the screen.
Making a speech.
Harry types in commands to automatically translate the code. The screen reads, "I am pleased to be in contact with your entities. I am enjoying this much."
Okay, ask him for his last name.
What?
I want a full name for my report. I'm not putting in my report that I lost a crew member on a deep sat expedition to find an alien named Jerry. Please, Jerry?
Harry, I think I told him that we're enjoying it too. Ask him where he's from.
Where are you from?
The reply comes back in two-digit code, which the computer translates.
I make a journey, you make a journey. We make a journey together.
I think Jerry's channeling Deepak Chopra.
Journey from where?
Harry types in a journey from where. The reply, "I am happy." Harry narrows his eyes in confusion.
He's happy.
He's crafty.
The screen goes blank.
What happened?
Oh, damn, I think we lost him.
We're not alone. We are definitely not alone. Harry, it's trying to make contact with us.
Well, whatever it is, it was inside that sphere. Now it's out and free to act.
What do you mean by that?
Free to take over our computers, free to call us on the phone, free to come over and knock on the door if it wants to.
A physical presence.
What are you thinking about, Norman?
That last part where he said, "I am happy."
Well, don't you want Jerry to be happy, Norman?
Honestly?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
I would be happy if Jerry had no emotions whatsoever. Because the thing of it is, once you go down that road, here's Jerry, an emotional being cooped up for 300 years with no one to talk to. None of the socialization, the emotional growth that comes from contact with other emotional beings.
So?
What happens if Jerry gets mad?
They stare uneasily at the black screen. Outside the habitat, the spacecraft lies in the clouded gloom. parts of it illuminated by diffuse beams of light from the lamps mounted around it. In white letters, The Monster. Norman's in the control room.
Evans, what is that sound? Did you hear it? Did you hear that thump? Evans, what is that sound? Evans, can you hear me? Did you hear that thump?
The others are in the galley.
You are a hell of a woman, Bat. I wish I knew you in the old days. You know, Norman told me you were quite...
Norman told you what?
Barnes has taken aback.
Well, let's put it this way, that if Jerry could read your mind, he'd be bored with ours.
Norman looks around him anxiously.
Edmonds, what is that sound? Edmonds, can you hear me?
In the galley, the others are listening.
Barnes, this is Norman. I get no answer from Edmonds, and there's some strange noises. Something's going on. Barnes?
They leap up and rush out. A huge shadowy object passes over the roof window in the galley. Barnes is in the video room.
Norman, Beth.
I can't see very clearly, but it looks like Edmonds is up on the side of the habitat.
They don diving suits.
Not getting anything on sonar, but watch yourselves out there.
They jump into the water in the docking port. Beth armed with a harpoon gun, Norman carrying a torch. They start to make their way around the habitat.
Beth, Norman, would you hit your callback buttons, please?
Would you tell Barnes?
About what?
About me, Norman.
He had my notes, Beth. What do you want me to do?
Mm-hmm. Did you tell him who I called, Norman?
Norman directs the torch up at one of the round habitat modules and stops, staring up in horror.
Oh, God.
Beth follows his gaze to see a limp body hanging off a yellow strut attached to the outside of the module. They move towards a ladder.
Norman? Come in. Beth?
Norman goes up the ladder first, and then climbs metal rungs attached to the outside of the module, eventually reaching a ledge and edging along it towards the body.
Norman? Beth? Did you guys find that thumping yet?
On the ledge, Norman reaches the body and looks behind him to check that Beth is with him. He moves his torch towards the diving helmet. Beth recoils as she takes hold of Edmund's leg and the diving boot at the end of it falls away, the foot inside slashed.
Beth, I don't get it. What could have done this to her?
Beth takes hold of Edmund's leg, the light on her helmet shining through the ghostly white foot.
Norman, she's like a rag doll. Her body's been completely pulverized.
Oh, my God.
Would it have tentacles 27 feet long? That would make a formidable monster.
Harry puts down the book he's been reading, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Let's go, come on. What?
Egg-shaped objects the size of rugby balls fall past.
What is that?
The objects have smooth, cream-coloured interiors and gelatinous coatings.
What does this mean? Talk to me. What does this mean, Ben?
Norman, there's something up there.
Hey, guys, I'm getting a reading on the sonar. I'm not alone out there.
Cameron, let's go!
All right!
Holding Edmund's limp corpse between them, they jump down from the module.
Let's go!
All right.
The eggs falling thick and fast around them.
What's going on?
Norman, it's 80 yards in closing. Get out of there.
A huge green echo is displayed on Barnes' sonar screen. Norman and Beth push through the falling eggs.
What the hell is this?
Come on, Norman! Come on, let's go!
60 yards. How close are you?
The seabed is now carpeted with eggs.
What the hell is it? What is it?
What the hell is it?
40 yards.
They scramble towards the ladder leading down from the docking port.
20 yards! Move!
Beth treading on one of the eggs, which bursts open, a white fish-like body exploding in a swirl of clear, viscous tendrils. Barnes watches the sonar screen. He looks up as a huge, serrated edge takes shape next to the zero mark. Beth and Norman climb the ladder into the docking port as the eggs continue to fall like gently drifting balloons. The serrated shape on the sonar screen disappears. Barnes goes into the suit room.
I need a report, Beth.
I don't know what the hell's going on out there. There are eggs everywhere.
Should have brought one back.
No, I wasn't up for an Easter egg hunt. Maybe that's what Edmonds was doing.
I want to talk to Jerry.
In white letters, battle stations.
Norman, if we're going to talk to this thing, we got to have a game plan.
Specific. We have to have an objective. We have to know what we're addressing. We have to be specific.
Oh, my God.
The screen reads, what is a game plan? Barnes looks round at Norman, who's rigid with fear.
Jerry? Jerry? Can you hear me?
Yes, Norman.
Jerry, you've heard everything we've been talking about.
Yes, Norman.
Well, that's great.
I am happy also.
Jerry? Hi, this is Ted here. I'm the guy who actually decoded the keyboard thing.
Shut
that
up. Tell him we need to discuss this together alone.
The word no is plastered all over the screen.
Jerry, use your words.
He's mad.
Jerry, use your words.
Let's just pull the plug.
It may not be that simple.
Yeah, it's that easy. We leave him alone, he leaves us alone.
Maybe he doesn't want to be left alone. He's been down here in isolation for 300 years. Maybe Jerry's lonely.
Lonely?
The screen reads, I want to talk now, right now, now. Beth comes in.
What's that?
Shh. It's our sonar. It's picking up something outside.
Sonar screen's blank.
Jerry, we all think that you're a fascinating and wonderful entity, and we wish to talk to you for hours and hours, Jerry. You know that, don't you?
I don't want to stop.
Jerry, and in your great understanding and wisdom, you must know that entities such as ourselves need to be private. You know, we have to talk alone sometime.
Are you afraid?
Oh, no. No, we're... Jerry, you know what it is. Jerry.
The screen goes blank.
Jerry?
Where did he go?
Something's clogging everything up out there.
Possible obstruction of transducer port 1. They gather to look at video feed from outside. Eggs raining down.
It's bad.
Positive thermals on the inline perimeter.
What's that?
Contemplating the sensor grid.
Do we have any defenses?
We've got high voltage electricity. We can run a current on the skin of the habitat, but every time we try it, we start an electrical fire. Peripheral sensors activated. I'm going to try to image it on the fast-acting sonar. Building an image. 80 yards, closing fast.
It's 40 feet long.
50 yards, re-imaging. That's the same image I saw when you were looking for Edmonds.
Looks like a giant squid.
A squid the size of the entire habitat? It's no such animal.
That may be, but that doesn't mean it isn't here.
Re-imaging 30 yards.
The habitat shudders.
What the hell's going on, Barnes?
Jerry, if you can hear me, it's Norman. If we've made you angry...
Well, we got a pressure drop. Ted, go to the control room and wait for me.
Why?
Just go, please! Go, I'll tell you!
Okay, what's that sound? What is that?
It sounds like it's right above us.
I know where it is, but what is it?
In the dormitory, Hattie's lying asleep on her bed. Beth looks down at the screen and pushes her hand into Norman's chest just behind her. She points at the screen. It reads, I am here. In the galley, the hob starts to shake. A trolley careers into it. A rivet flies out of a metal wall, water shooting through the hole. Ted runs into a pipe room. He ducks as equipment above him erupts in a shower of brilliant white sparks. A pipe bursts. Barnes looks at the screen, still reading, I am here.
Ted, do you hear me?
Yeah!
You've got to increase the positive air pressure and drive the water out. Do you understand that?
Increase the pressure? But then you're looking for air supply!
If the habitat is full of water, you'll be dead. Now open the red gate valve.
Water pours in around Port Hills.
The pressure is dropping. We'll be crushed like a tin can. Find the red knob, Ted. It's the only one in the room.
Ted turns a red valve cock. Pressure indicators on the screen rise.
All right, good. Good, we're getting positive pressure. All right, not too much now. Start to eat it back.
An electrical spark flies at Ted and throws him back against the opposite wall. Holding his bloody head, he slips to the floor. Water starts to flood in through the joints between metal wall plates. The indicator screen flashes.
Turn it back! The
pressure is too high. Ted!
We'll explode. Can you hear me?
Ted slumped on the floor.
Ted, turn it back!
Pots jump into the air in the galley. A pipe in a ceiling bursts. Norman and Beth run through juddering corridors, being thrown from side to side, eventually reaching the control shaft.
Norman, can you hear me?
I got him.
Norman!
Turn the red gate valve.
Which way?
Clockwise. Close it.
He reaches up through the pouring streams of water, twisting the valve wheel. The pressure indicators start to fall.
Fire! We're still leaking!
It's not the outer shell, it's the internal pipes. They're just leaking. We're okay.
An explosion just above Barnes' head brings a screen crashing down on the desk in front of him. He gets back to his feet.
Norman, listen to me. Whatever it is, it's not letting go.
You gotta pull the green lever marked high voltage defense system.
No, you said it would start a fire. Don't do it. Barnes, you said it would start a fire.
We're gonna die down here. Pull it.
Barnes, you hear her?
Don't listen to her. She's crazy. Pull the green lever.
The habitat is rocked again, throwing Norman away from the lever.
Norman, pull the lever!
What are you trying to pull? He's trying to pull something! Don't do it!
No, you hear her!
You can't listen to her. Pull the goddamn lever!
Don't do it, Norman! It could start the fire!
Pull it!
Wait a minute!
Wait a minute! Don't do it!
A crack flits across the round window on the galley roof. Norman puts his hands on the lever.
We've got failures all over the place, Norman. We're taking on water!
Norman, you'll start a fire! There's no way out!
Shut up! What am I going to do?
The habitat shudders. The motion catches Norman off balance and he pulls on the lever. Norman looks up at Beth as she straightens, looking shamefaced. Gradually, Norman gets to his feet, water still pouring down in the dark control shaft.
We're okay. Don't have to be right all the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
Ted gets up.
Anybody got some Manitou?
Oh, God. Norman, we got a fire in the comm room. Get up there. I'll meet you with gas masks in case we need them.
A communication from Jerry. I will kill you all. Barnes runs down a passageway and wrenches a fire extinguisher from the wall. Beth and Norman meet him in the blazing room.
Where's the fire extinguisher?
Over here. There's a one there.
I got it. How do you work it?
Pull the pin!
Norman and Beth release an extinguisher each as Ted comes in.
Are there any more?
I saw some in the door!
Ted backs out as Beth tries to douse the flames. Ted climbs a ladder to another level. Barnes stows his extinguisher and runs towards a closing door. It locks itself. He runs to another door. As it closes, he wedges it open with a small black case. Ted finds Harry asleep on his bed.
Harry! Harry! Harry, wake up! Harry, come on, what are you doing, Harry? Harry, wake up!
Ted moves away. Harry is deep asleep with rapid eye movement. Ted unfastens a couple of small extinguishers and heads back down the ladder. Barnes grabs his extinguisher and tries to wriggle through the gap in the wedged open security door. He's half out when the case falls out of the door, which closes on him.
Doors now. Secured.
Norman is fighting the fire.
Freezing piles! Fighting can do it from the cafeteria!
Get that!
Beth climbs up a metal staircase. She watches a sheet of low blue flame travel across the floor like a spilt liquid. Norman reads Jerry's message from the screen. I will kill you all.
Don't, Jerry. Don't.
An explosion sends him hurtling backwards. He's knocked out against the wall. Chased by spreading flame, Ted charges into the comm room.
Norman! Norman!
You okay? Hang on!
He extinguishes the flames leaping up through the latticework floor. A chunk of flaming metal swings from the ceiling, knocking him out. It falls, pinning him down. Through the lattice floor, he watches flames spreading below.
Get up!
The flames shoot up through the floor, burning Ted alive. A giant fireball rips through the upper deck. Suddenly, the flames go out. Clutching her fire extinguisher, Beth emerges onto the upper deck. She turns fearfully this way and that, alert to every sizzle from her fire-blasted surroundings. Short, wet hair plastered close to her head, she stands still, her eyes narrowed suspiciously. Something is closing in on her. Her eyes widen with fear. The lights go out. The number of body bags in the medical room has increased to a small pile. Scorched files on burnt shelving units. Norman is sitting in front of a monitor screen in the control room.
This is Norman, Jerry. Can you hear me? Jerry, it's Norman. Is that you, Jerry? It's Norman. Jerry, who put out the fire? Jerry, who put the fire out?
A message appears. Where is the control entity, Harold C. Barnes? I do not sense that entity now.
He's dead. Barnes is dead. He got cut in half by the door. Beth and I put him in a body bag.
Jerry, I do not sense the entity Ted.
I know. Something happened to Ted, Jerry.
Jerry, bring him back.
I can't.
Bring back the entity Ted. He was humorous.
I can't. It's not in my power.
Norman considers.
There was a fire and, and I froze. I didn't help him. I wanted to, but I didn't help him.
He compresses his lips, sadly.
I knew him since he was 17 years old and I let him go. Okay, but I'd like to just deal with this at a later time.
Message from Jerry. Did you like the giant squid?
You made that, Jerry.
His gaze flicks round fearfully. Jerry, do you like it? I can manifest it more for you.
No, that's all right. No, Jerry. Very important. Nothing more right now, please, okay?
I do not wish to stop.
Jerry, you have to stop. Jerry, listen to me. This is critical.
A black and white monitor shows Harry in the galley.
Your manifestations injure our entities, and pretty soon there'll be no more entities left to play with, and you'll be all alone again because you can't control yourself. Because with all your power, you don't have the power to stop, do you, Jerry?
A message. Stop calling me Jerry. Norman presses his fist to his chin, pondering.
What name do you want? Jerry? Jerry? What name do you want? Jerry?
The screen remains blank. Inside the spacecraft, the golden sphere shimmers enigmatically. In the galley, Harry is sitting at the counter in the half-light, still reading 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Norman walks down a dark corridor towards the galley. A neon light flashes on and off, and water drips from the ceiling.
Hi, Harry. How you doing?
Norman!
Can you believe what happened?
What?
You know, the attack on the habitat. You know, there was an attack on this place.
No, I must have slept through it.
You slept through it?
I was dead tired.
Harry looks down at his book.
So, smoke didn't bother you? All the leaking, you know?
Norman, you ever read this book, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? I found it in the giant, probably somebody's misguided attempt at levity. I always loved this book. Could never get past page 87, though. Too scary.
You know, you seem strangely detached, given our predicament.
I don't know, Norman. With all your panic and running around, what have you accomplished?
You knew I was running around?
Harry stares directly at him.
You seen, Beth?
No. Thought she's with the others.
What others? Barnes and Ted are dead, Harry. There's nobody left down here that knows how to run the place anymore. Right? Fire screwed up the electronics. We've used up most of our reserve gas. You're reading your book?
Norman looks quizzically at Harry. Beth strolls in.
Somebody has to go reset the mini-sub. You know, if you don't reset it every 12 hours, it'll float to the surface, remember?
I'll go.
No. I'll go.
You sure?
Oh, yes.
If the storm clears, you know, it might be our only way back out.
Can I talk to you for a second?
Uh-huh.
In the corridor.
I don't want Harry anywhere near that mini-sub.
Why, you think he's going to leave without us?
Oh, I think he's already left without us. I think Harry's in a whole other place. Did you know he slept through the attack? You don't find that a little strange?
He climbs down a ladder.
Well, I guess it's just you and me, babe.
He stops climbing.
You and me, Beth?
Yeah. I'll keep my eye on you from the control room.
A black and white monitor in the control room shows Norman's slow, torchlit progress across the ocean floor. He surfaces inside the dimly lit hangar that houses the sub. With his headlamp lit, he climbs down through a narrow vertical tunnel into the small bubble-like cabin of the mini sub.
Reset, where are you? There you are.
He flicks a red switch on, then off. Outside, Norman makes his way back towards the habitat, the gloomy depths giving his swinging torch beam a bluish quality.
Beth? Beth, are there supposed to be bubbles coming out of the... out of your suit?
A stream of bubbles issues from his suit.
Beth, I think I have bubbles coming out of my balls or something. Beth? Beth, can you tell me what to do? It's fogging me all up here.
He rubs his visor.
Beth, there's something wrong here. I gotta get out of here. Tell me what to do. What do I find? Beth, where the hell are you? Coming?
Norman flounders, dropping his torch. In the control room, Harry coldly watches Norman's predicament on the monitor. Harry keys something in.
Beth, tell me what to do. I can't breathe here.
Hey, watch out for that rock. Me, Harry. Come around the rock. Go to the right of the stanchion.
Tell me what to do, Harry. I'm hurting. I'm around which way? I can't breathe, Harry.
Yes, you can breathe. You just have a faulty valve. It's not going to kill you. You got plenty of gas.
Tell which way I'm going, Harry.
See the airlock? It's right in front of me.
Harry moves away.
And I can't breathe. Please.
A sea snake attacks his visor. Norman falls backwards. The snake's fangs snatch at Norman's visor. Norman scrambles back as the snake wriggles away. Up ahead, the illuminated ladder shines tantalizingly. Later, Harry's with Norman inside the airlock.
Where is she? Slow your breathing. Slow down. You're going to hyperventilate.
Where is she? Should you keep an eye out for me?
I looked all over the habitat for her. I couldn't find her. I thought maybe she was with you.
Beth's diving suit is missing. In the control room, Harry and Norman watch her emerge from the spacecraft.
Did she tell you she was going out?
Beth?
Norman? I can't hear you.
She can't hear you. Why'd she answer?
Beth, what are you doing?
I went out looking for food. We're out of food.
I was just up there. There's stuff all over the place, but there's plenty of food.
You went to look for food in the spacecraft. That seems a little odd, don't you think?
No, what seems odd about it?
Well, even if there was food, wouldn't it be at least 300 years old?
Hey, I was hoping for a cryogenic freezer, you know?
Maybe a bottle of Bordeaux?
She grins.
She's lying about everything.
Is Harry up there with you?
Harry shakes his head and mouths no.
Why don't we just talk when you get back? Meet me in the galley. I'll buy you a cup of coffee. There's still coffee, isn't there?
Very funny. I'll take mine black like my mood.
All right, see you soon.
Harry switches off talkback.
We got two ingredients here. Beth and this underwater environment. Put them together, you got one big-ass bomb.
Beth strides through the dripping corridors to the galley.
Good thing for you, I came by when I did. Well,
hey, how'd it go in the mini-sub?
Well, it's a little disconcerting out there, actually.
Oh?
Yeah. Weren't you supposed to be watching out for me from the control room?
Yeah, but Harry said he'd take over for me. You sat down at the monitors.
Harry glances at Norman.
What happened?
I was in trouble. Where were you?
What's going on?
What's going on? Well, all I know is going out to look for 300-year-old food in that spaceship when there's plenty of food here isn't exactly normal.
Plenty of food? There isn't any...
She pulls open covers full of supplies, then checks the fridge.
Ta-da! A veritable horn of plenty.
Confused, Beth slowly turns to face them. Norman and Harry stare hard at her. Beth frowns in puzzlement.
You must have hidden it.
You think I hid all that food?
I don't know what's going on here, but... I was standing right here, and there was no food in the cupboards.
She shuts the cupboard door.
And there was no food in the fridge.
Why, Beth? Why would Harry do that? Why would he set you up?
Oh, Norman, I just...
You don't know.
I'm telling you, I was standing here, and this food was not here.
Calling Dr. Halperin. Dr. Beth Halperin, please return to reality.
Shut up. Okay, you can see what he's doing to me.
Look, you were supposed to watch out for me, you didn't. You think Harry said something that he didn't. You think the cupboards are empty when they're full. Clinically, we would call that evidence of a psychotic break, all right?
I'm not crazy, Norman. What are you going to do, write me a prescription? And just get rid of me again? Well, it's not that convenient down here, Norman, okay? I am not psychotic.
How about a mini-psychotic break?
It's not fair.
Beth!
What?
I'm down there. I can't breathe. I'm hyperventilating. The man saved me.
But I...
Wait a minute. Now, you want me to believe that he set you up. Why? This isn't Alice in Wonderland. Remember? Just you and me, babe? Is it unrealistic to think that at this point you are a danger to yourself, you are a danger to all of us, because of your anger toward me, which happened, whatever it was, 10 or 15 years ago, which is so distorted in your head? I was out there. You almost got me killed. The man tried to save my life. You now want me to disbelieve Harry?
Yes, I want you to disbelieve Harry. I want you to look at me and believe me for one time, Norman. Don't you look at me, Norman. Am I telling you the truth?
You weren't there, Beth.
You want to believe Harry? Norman, then that's fine, okay? Because he's done everything but part the sea for you since we've been down here, okay? But I'm telling you that he is not telling you the truth.
This is not about Harry, is it?
He moves closer to her.
Who's this about?
He didn't tell you what's inside the sphere, did he? You didn't tell him, did you? You didn't tell him what's inside the sphere.
And how would you know that, Beth?
Norman looks questioningly at Beth.
Did you go inside the sphere?
She turns to look at him.
Answer me, did you go inside the sphere? Why won't you answer me, Beth?
Her expression turns sour.
It's a question.
You don't want to talk to me. Remember?
Answer a question.
She walks out, rudely giving him the finger behind her back.
What do you think, Harry?
You think she went in the sphere?
Harry shrugs and sips his drink. Norman shakes his head wearily. He spots Harry's book on the floor and bends to pick it up.
Oh, here. You dropped your book.
Norman freezes. Harry sitting at the counter reading 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Norman looks down at the book in his hands with its identical green and blue cover. Norman's eyes narrow suspiciously and he backs away, bumping into the cupboards behind him. There are copies of the book littered all over the work surfaces. Harry calmly continues to read. Breathing heavily, Norman opens a cupboard door. The cupboard is packed full of copies of the book. Norman turns to Harry, aghast. Harry continues reading as Norman tentatively opens the fridge door. The fridge is full of the book. Copies tumble down. Norman manages to slam the door shut and leans heavily against it. He turns to look at Harry, who hasn't stopped reading or altered his posture. Another book falls at Norman's feet. Harry calmly turns a page. Beth is standing at a well-lit bathroom mirror. She opens a bottle of pills, breaks one in half and swallows it with a glass of water. She flexes her neck and takes the other half. Slipping a couple of pills into her trouser pocket, she replaces the lid. Norman's in the control room.
Jerry, what isn't Harry telling me? Jerry, I know you're there. You're always there. What's inside the sphere, Jerry?
He stares at the monitor.
Harry is reading this book, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. What makes me nervous is that after page 87...
He flicks through the book.
It's all blank pages. Why? Why did he go into the sphere and come out like this? Why? Why? Why, Jerry? Why is this book half a book, Jerry? Why? Why? What's going on?
A message appears. Stop calling me Jerry. Norman works at a table with a pencil and paper.
He's got J equals 1. That's right. He's got B equals 2. Uh-huh. He's got H equals 3. That's not right. Harry's got the code wrong. H doesn't equal 3.
He stares at his calculations. Wearing her diving suit, Beth is making her way through the subterranean depths. Her torchlight picks out long pipes on the ground near the spacecraft. She sets a box-shaped unit on the ocean bed with Panther explosives written on it. Beth touches a panel on the side and a red light comes on. She flicks two switches on top of the box and the word armed appears on a small screen. Norman is still sitting at his desk figuring out the code. There are numbers written next to the letters of the alphabet. He spells out, "My name," and looks back at his notes. Beth walks across the ocean floor towards the spacecraft. At his desk, Norman has completed the sentence, "My name is Harry." His expression is grave. Norman's eyes dart uncertainly. In white letters, further analysis. On a dimly lit lower level of the habitat, Norman talks with Beth.
Beth, he makes it real for you, he makes it real for me, he has made it real for everybody. It's really frightening because you don't know whether it's really real or whether he's made it real for us to believe it's real. And it's because of the sphere.
Our Harry is Jerry.
Come on, Beth. I'm just as tired as you are. Come on, just. I know you can get this, okay? Harry said he couldn't get past page 87 because he said it was too scary, okay?
There's nothing on the pages. Where's the rest of the book?
Read what's on page 87.
According to calculations of some naturalists, one of these animals, only 6 feet long, would have tentacles 27 feet long. That would make a formidable monster.
What does Harry hate?
Squid.
And when he read that, it scared him. Getting the picture? Remember all those jellyfish that attacked, right? What was Harry doing then?
Sleeping.
He was dreaming. And this is the really wild part. What he dreamed...
happened?
It happened.
Oh. You're telling me that because Harry went inside the sphere, he now has the power to manifest his dreams, his fantasies.
Manifest. He manifested it. He made it happen.
Well, we better not piss him off.
It's not that different from a child, right? A child imagines that what it's imagining happens, but it doesn't. But with Harry, it does. In fact, it's so real, it's not only real to Harry, it's real to all of us. And what I can't understand is that ever since he went in the sphere has some kind of power that projects every subconscious thought that Harry has onto the computer. It prints it out, and we interact with it. We thought it was Jerry. It's not Jerry, it's Harry. Harry's Jerry.
Does Harry know this?
No! And what I don't understand is that you went in the sphere and nothing happened.
Obviously, I didn't go in the sphere.
Beth,
You never went inside the sphere. You didn't go in there.
I was so angry at you. I wanted you to be scared.
Maybe you had a right to be.
Thanks.
You're sure you didn't go in there?
She shakes her head.
I don't know about you, Norman, but I don't really feel like dying down here.
What we're going to do is find something to put Harry under. We can put him in some kind of deep, unconscious sleep.
Dreamless sleep, I hope.
A dreamless sleep, yes. How do we do that?
Well, I got a bunch of drugs up there.
Fancy that. Diphenylperylene.
Burns.
Ephedrine hydrochloride.
Motion sickness.
Valdomet.
Ulcers. You might want to keep that.
Syntac.
Syntac is a synthetic opiate. It's a painkiller.
Oh.
I might want to keep that.
What about Parasoltrin?
Really? I got paracin trichloride. That's an anesthetic.
What do you do, combine it?
You do about 20 cc's of this one, 6 of this one. You're in business.
Here's some more paras.
Good. We'll knock them out for about 3 to 6 hours.
The voices echo around the habitat's hollow chambers. Beth and Norman stealthily make their way towards the dormitory. Norman whispers in Beth's ear. Harry's lying face down on the bed. Beth has the syringe. Norman holds Harry down.
What's going on?
I can't go back to sleep.
Beth compresses the syringe plunger. Harry goes still.
Jeez, I didn't know it would be that fast acting.
We didn't kill him, did we?
I don't think so.
Norman feels for a pulse. In the control room, Beth and Norman try to access the OSSA computer.
Come on, come on, come on. Here we go.
They receive a transmission. Beth gestures at Norman.
It's a code.
Beth claps a hand over her mouth and stares at the screen.
How the hell are we supposed to be able to... it's the coding itself.
Beth reads the message.
Weather conditions normal. Surface of port vessels return. 6 hours and count. We're out of here.
They smile at each other.
It's over.
Beth tilts her head to one side and props it up with her fingers.
If you trust it.
You know me, I believe everything.
But out on the ocean floor, the armed Panther explosives unit lurks in the subaqueous gloaming. Harry's still lying face down in his bunk. Norman is in a nearby bathroom, brushing his teeth in front of a mirror. The room is flooded with several inches of water. He turns off the tap. But can still hear water gurgle under the sink. He stands back and looks at the sink unit. He opens the cabinet door and looks underneath the sink. Next to a stopcock, a dirty sponge, cleaning fluids, and a tin of scouring powder. He bends down for a closer look. An eel-like water snake swims across the water and shoots up his trouser leg. The snake's inside Norman's t-shirt. He writhes on his back as a second snake attacks. Beth stalks slowly into the bathroom. She bends over him, grabs a snake in each hand, and calmly straightens up.
They're Belcher sea snakes, Norman. They're the most poisonous snakes in the world. But they're nocturnal. They're only dangerous at night.
Panting, he staggers to his feet, the neck of his t-shirt stretched to reveal his chest. Beth fixes him with a sphinx-like stare.
Norman, can you meet me at the lab, please? I have something I need to show you. Norman?
Norman climbs up a ladder and through a circular hatch in the lab floor. The room is empty. Beth springs up the ladder behind him and closes the hatch, locking him in.
Beth, what are you doing? I'm here. Beth! What are you doing? Beth!
Norman sinks to his knees and pulls at the door.
Why are you locking me in?
Beth runs to the control room and accesses the lab on a monitor screen.
Norman, you manifested the snakes.
What?
Norman, up here, Norman. You're the only one who could be manifesting these snakes. Turn around and look on the table.
Norman turns away from the camera. There's a full syringe on the table.
See the hypodermic needle?
Yeah.
I want you to inject yourself, Norman.
I what?
It's got the same thing in it that we used to inject Harry.
Norman,
you're manifesting your fears. The jellyfish, now the snakes. Okay, the squid thing was Harry, but he's asleep. He's in a dreamless sleep. It couldn't be him. You are the only one left, Norman.
Beth, why would the snakes have anything to do with me? I didn't go in the sphere.
See the jars, Norman? Well, I put the snakes in there, and they disappeared in front of my eyes.
Who's manifesting them, Norman? You are.
I don't have anything to do with snakes.
If you don't use the hypodermic needle, I am going to have to defend myself.
I remember if I went in the sphere.
Norman, don't make me do this. I don't want to do this.
I didn't manifest.
Beth enters commands into the keyboard.
Beth, why are you taking the gas out of the room, Beth? That's my air.
Jars on the lab shelves shatter. Water starts to rush in, spilling over the floor. Norman looks around wildly.
What's with this water?
Norman, think it through. Whose childhood fears were the jellyfish?
Jellyfish?
Remember,
come on,
Norman.
I'm the only one who's afraid of the jellyfish.
It wasn't exactly a jellyfish. Jellyfish like this are unheard of.
Anybody can be afraid of jellyfish. Why are you afraid of jellyfish?
Isn't it possible that you went inside the sphere and you just don't remember?
I didn't go inside the sphere. You would have seen it on the video. I didn't go inside the sphere.
Yes, you did.
No, was he alive?
Went inside the sphere, and you just don't remember. That's the problem.
The two empty jars now contain two writhing sea snakes.
Inject yourself with the hypodermic needle.
The jars shatter. The snakes swim free. A flashback to the first snake attack.
Norman, you can make it go away. Just use the hypodermic needle and then it'll go away. And the ships will come and we'll get out of here.
Beth! Beth, what are you doing? You're gonna kill me!
The needle is lost in the rising water. Norman grabs onto a light fitting.
Norman, you can stop it. Try to pull yourself together, Norman. Your fears are gonna kill all of us.
He spies a ceiling hatch above him. Norman plunges down to the lab floor for a slim cylinder of oxygen attached to a face mask. He resurfaces and climbs onto the broad light fitting.
Please, Norman, don't open the hatch. You'll freeze to death in the water.
Norman wrestles with the hatch.
Norman! No! Norman, you'll kill yourself. Don't open the hatch.
Norman is sucked out of the hatch into the ocean. Holding the oxygen mask to his face, his body whirls around in a slipstream of bubbles. In the control room, Beth looks up anxiously. Norman tries to swim forward. Grabbing hold of a pipe, he drops the cylinder, which drifts slowly to the seabed. In control, the monitors screen random clips from recent archive. Beth frowns as Barnes appears on the screen.
I know enough not to get killed down here. Are you the most qualified in your field?
What exactly are your qualifications?
Why are you here? Your qualifications. Why are you here? Why are you here? Why are you here? Why are you here?
Terrified, Beth looks this way and that.
Almost got me killed.
Killed. Why are you here?
You're a danger to all of us.
Seizing Dr. Halpern.
Come back to reality.
Why are you here? Why are you here? Why are you here?
She dashes out of the room. Norman grabs a long pipe and pulls himself down to the ocean floor. He picks up the oxygen cylinder and presses it to his face. In the control rooms, the monitors flash crazily. Clips of Harry when he slept through the fire give way to a message. Like I said, we die down here. As a matter of deductive logic, Norman. Norman swims up beside the ladder into the airlock. He clings to the side of the pool. The drugs wear off and Harry wakes with a start. Beth is running frantically along a passage. She unlocks a heavy door. A surge of water sweeps her off her feet and washes her up against a wall. A revolving annex door slides open, and Norman enters the chamber containing the group's dive suits. His temple is grazed and bleeding. He pulls off his wet, hooded top, throws it on the floor and walks over to the solid exit door. Twisting catches, he unlocks it. The door remains closed. Norman thumps it. Faint cries draw his attention to a circular hatch in the floor. A shaft of bright light streams up from it. Norman lowers himself onto the ladder and climbs down. Beth is huddled on the floor near the bottom of the ladder. Beth is crouched, facing the wall. Terrified, Beth slowly lifts her head. She stares at Norman in disbelief, a tear streaking down her cheek.
Mm-hmm.
Norman is standing in a shaft of light. He nods.
Are you real?
He stares down at the crouching Beth.
As real as the water that almost drowned me. Trying to kill me.
She stares up at him with a hurt, bewildered expression.
What are you doing?
She stares in confusion.
Beth, you went into the sphere. Didn't you?
She shoots him a horrified look, scrambles to her feet and heads down a passageway. Norman follows. Harry is up and making his way along another passageway. Beth steps through a door and leans heavily against the wall.
Beth.
Harry overhears them from above.
Beth, you want to answer me?
I don't know what to think, Norman. I feel like I can't breathe. I'm losing it, you know? I'm trying to keep it together.
What's going on? Why'd you put me out? Just what are you guys up to?
You went in the sphere, Harry. So did Beth.
So did I.
I think.
And if so, what?
Everything that we feel, everything that we think just happens. That's what happened to the astronauts.
The guy, the astronaut in the chair, what did he say about his head?
He had blunt force trauma. He got hit in the head.
They went in the sphere one by one. And they became more and more afraid of each other till they killed each other off, and we're doing the same thing.
I don't want to kill you, Norman.
He lifts his eyebrows wryly.
Your attention, please. All construction personnel must exit the blast area immediately. Panther explosives are now activated. Mark 13 minutes and counting.
Anybody want to tell me who that voice is?
Yeah, they had explosives down here. You know, to blow up the coral. So when I went out before, I set up a defense perimeter around the door of the spaceship. So something must have triggered it.
What?
Something from inside the sphere.
Nothing in the sphere, Beth. You know that. You've been inside it.
Been what?
I don't know.
Been who?
Harry looks at Norman and indicates Beth with a nod of his head.
It's me. I was just thinking about the explosives. It just flashed inside my mind. It must have triggered them.
Hand on hip, Norman stares fiercely at her. She meets his gaze.
I was thinking about wanting to die.
You put explosives near the spacecraft?
Yeah, I did. But they're about 100 yards away.
There's a lot of liquid hydrogen left on that spacecraft. If it explodes, it'll disintegrate everything.
Beth shoots Norman a terrified look.
Finish up now. Let's go.
They race down a corridor.
hope there's a ship up there.
In the diving suit chamber, they scramble into their gear, buckling up suits, pulling on gloves, and securing their breathing packs to their backs. They step into the revolving annex. The timer on the explosives reads 9:58 and counting. Helmeted, they plunge down through the airlock pool and race along the ocean floor.
Come on.
They charge around some rocks, heading for the mini sub.
Come on, move. Let's keep moving.
We're not gonna make it.
The timer reads 7:34, 7:33. They rush up a ladder into the hangar, climb down into the mini-sub and lock themselves in. They sit three abreast in the cramped, transparent cabin. Norman flicks switches on the control pad.
Wait.
It's not like I drive subs, Ben, okay?
Yeah, well, you're driving one now.
The three look up in alarm.
Oh, my God.
What's going on?
I don't know.
Why are we inside the spaceship?
I don't know.
Let's go! Come on!
They scramble into a lift.
We're not moving. Anybody hit the button?
Norman turns around.
What the hell?
A walkway stretches ahead.
Wait a minute, this was an elevator before, right?
Which one of us is doing this?
Oh, God.
They run forwards.
Alert, Panther, explosives are
Wait, we were here already!
3 minutes, 53 seconds.
How much time we got? Come on!
It's a dead end.
Where are we?
An illusion.
Doesn't look right, you guys. Come on.
Which way? Harry, where do we go?
Where? Where's where, Norman? Around that corner, down that corner? And what's there, huh? Just another blind alley in the maze of our minds. Illusion.
Maybe he's right, Norman.
No, Beth, we believe that we're dead.
Just go on. Leave me.
You're not going to die down here, not to let you die. Come on! I'm not gonna let you die! Come on! I'm not gonna die!
They stand before the sphere. Norman's image swims to the surface.
Push the button. I can't see the button.
They're in the mini-sub.
It's no use. We died down here.
Now they're back in the spaceship.
Running out of time, it all looks the same.
1 minute, 38.
I don't know where we are. I don't know what we're stuck in. Where we are. We're stuck in the illusion that we can change the future. It's a dead end, Norman. Just like I said all along, we die down here.
Maybe he's right. Maybe he's right, Norman. Maybe he's right.
I'm not gonna die here.
Beth's not gonna die here.
And you're not gonna die here.
Look, just leave me.
Harry, we're not in the spacecraft. We're in the mini sun. This isn't real. This is your manifestation. Let it go.
It's a dead end.
You're not gonna die here, Harry. It's not our time to die.
Norman presses a red button on the control pad. Their bodies jolt as the sub drops from the hangar and thrusts forward. The mini-sub resembles a glass marble held in a yellow three-pronged clamp, a strong lamp at the end of each prong.
Thank God, we're out of here.
Well, don't start celebrating yet.
Why not?
I don't think we're going fast enough.
Fast enough for what?
Well, an underwater blast creates a suction that'll suck us right back into it. That is, if the shockwave doesn't kill us first.
Now, alert, mark, 20 seconds, and counting. Answer, explosives are now activated.
The tiny sub moves steadily up through the gloomy depths. 12 seconds and counting.
640 feet. 630. 620.
The luminous golden sphere revolves as the Panther timer counts down. 5, 4.
610. You religious man, Norm?
Atheist. But I'm flexible.
A fireball balloons across the ocean floor, exploding in a flash of bright white light. The spacecraft's tall tower disintegrates like a glittering tower block. Shockwaves radiate from the underwater blast. They catch up with the mini-sub. Sending it spiraling in a mass of flame and debris.
Pull up, Norman! Pull up!
The mini-sub rolls over and over. A strong wave of water mushrooms up from below. In the distance, under a hazy blue sky, several large ships float in a choppy sea. A cloud of white bubbles breaks the surface of the ocean. The mini-sub surfaces and bobs on the foamy water.
This is Escort 7. We have sighted OSSA mini-sub bearing 105. Repeat, bearing 105. Preparing to make contact for decompression procedure.
In white letters, decompression chamber, day one. Beth peers through a porthole in the chamber's locked circular door.
What's going on?
More of nothing.
Norman's lying in his bunk. Beth sits next to him.
I want to thank you for saving my life.
Interesting life to save.
Beth leans forward and kisses his cheek, then pats his arm.
You get some sleep.
I have no idea what to tell them when they debrief us.
Harry is asleep on his bunk. Two men in suits peer in at them through the porthole window. Later, the three survivors follow a crewman along a corridor. Norman limps slightly.
My back is killing me. Next time I have to remember to stretch before I jettison from the mini-sub.
Dressed in their own casual clothes, they are led into a large empty room. Its gunmetal grey has equipment stored on the walls and white benches. Their guide shuts them in, alone.
Look, we've been trapped in here for about 3 days, all right? They want some kind of explanation. I think we got to figure out what we want to tell them.
Killer jellyfish, squid, sea snakes, and an alien being in the form of a giant totemic golden ball? Please.
Look, we destroyed $100 million worth of equipment down there, and people died. Now they want some answers. I want to know what you guys want to tell them.
Harry, why aren't we dead?
What?
Remember what you said? The future can't be changed.
It can't.
Yeah, but in the spaceship they call it an unknown entry event. Unknown. Like we never got here alive to tell them about it. You said we wouldn't survive, remember? If you can't change the future, then we should be dead. We're alive, we're not dead.
Yeah, and in about 2 minutes we're going to be in a room full of military guys, all right? Now they know about the sphere. We know Barnes got a hold of them before we lost contact to the surface. So what do you want to tell them?
Why bother? The sphere's destroyed.
But we still have the power, am I right?
Harry shrugs.
Look, I don't know if I trust them with it, all right? Frankly, I don't know if I trust either one of you guys. But I'll tell you this much. I don't want to not be able to sleep, afraid I'm going to wake up with having manifested some nightmare and there's all kinds of weird things in my apartment.
That's a frightening thought.
Yeah, no kidding. So, if we still have the power, what do you want to do with it?
Norman looks at Harry, who folds his arms.
God knows what they'll do with it.
Are you saying you're worried about what will happen if it falls into the wrong hands?
Yeah. And frankly, I don't know what the wrong hands are. What's worse, the wrong hands or our hands?
We are the wrong hands. Okay? We proved it. Like, you know, the three of us are three enlightened people. We're intelligent. We even recycle our cans and our bottles. But when we got our shot, we manifested every mean, distorting, vengeful, paranoid thought you could think of. We did. Right?
So you believe we still have the power?
Of course we still have it. And that's the answer to the equation. We can't change the future. We're not dead, but they don't know. Why?
I'm not following you.
Because we have the power to forget.
He stares at them.
Forget.
You want us to agree to forget?
Wait a minute. Are we sure that we want to do this?
Yes.
I mean, this is the greatest discovery in the history of mankind, and now we're just going to white it out like it's some kind of typing error.
Norman, I'm sure.
What about you, Pat?
What's the matter, Norman?
It's a little hard to let go, you know?
Yes.
Something that could have been. This gift, the power to make your dreams come true. We're given the greatest gift in the history of mankind. We're given this magic ball, and it says, imagine what you will, and you can have it. That's an extraordinary gift, but we're so primitive. We manifested the worst in us because what we have inside us is what we have inside of us, instead of the
best of us. What does that say about us?
Harry lifts his head.
We weren't ready, Norman.
We have what's called an imagination. I mean, look what we're capable of. We can...
He glances thoughtfully at the ceiling, then his lips compress into a thin, serious line.
We're not ready.
Harry glances resignedly at the floor. Norman turns to Beth, standing next to him.
You know, a long time ago, I did something very, very inappropriate with you, and I'm sorry.
She smiles.
Okay. I don't have any answers, Norman, but these guys are coming, so let's...
Okay, we're gonna agree to forget the sphere, the power, all that ever was.
They stand together in the center of the room and clasp hands.
I don't know how to get this going, Harry. You're the mathematician.
How about we just count to three?
I couldn't have come up with that.
Grinning, he glances at Beth, who shakes her head.
Okay, I'll start.
Norman closes his eyes. In the dark depths of the ocean, the golden sphere begins to travel up through the water. Harry's eyes are closed. The sphere continues to rise. Beth opens her eyes. The sphere breaks through the surface of the waves and rises up into the blue sky. Crew on the ship's deck stand and stare.
Somebody tell me what the hell that's supposed to be.
Beth glances up at the ceiling in confusion. Norman is still holding hands with Harry. He shoots him a puzzled look.
Why are you holding my hand?
No, you are holding my hand.
Norman unclasps his fingers from Harry's. The sphere speeds through the Earth's cloudy stratosphere and into deep black outer space, where it morphs into a golden streak of light and disappears. The three colleagues wait quietly on the white benches, their postures relaxed. Distant stars twinkle in deep space. Suddenly, there's a rent in the blackness, and a white streak spirals outward, scattering stars as it grows. ITFC audio description by Lonnie Evans and Mark Leavesley was read by James O'Hara.